Blog Talk Radio. everybody. Welcome to the Ant Canary Experience. I'm your host, Ant Canary. It is January 16, 2018. It's after 9 o'clock tonight, doing a special, had to do a special time because I had a little family thing I had to take care of. Barely got it taken care of. I had about 10 minutes before the show started, so I wasn't sure I was going to be able to get this going on time, but I'm here. Everything's good. Should be back next week at regular time, 8 to 10. Tonight I'm going to probably try to do until about maybe 10:30. We've got some crummy weather coming in sometime tonight, maybe early tomorrow. So, unfortunately, I am one of those people that the jobs like to say I am essential personnel, which means I got to be there no matter what. So if we get 2 inches of snow, or, you know, I'm hoping for maybe a couple of feet so that I can stay home tomorrow and watch cartoons. But we'll see. So I'll try to get everything in about an hour and a half. But, you know, if you still want to call in, please call in. I should memorize this number by 563-999-3682. So like I said, I'm going to try to get all this information in within maybe an hour and a half. There's a lot to cover, so I'm going to jump right on it. As you know, yesterday was celebrated Martin Luther King's birthday. So I'm going to play some clips, some of his famous speeches and everything. So I won't go into his life because I'm sure you already know about it. But I do just want to touch on a few topics, play some of his some clips from his most famous speeches, and then intertwine that with what's going on with Trump and his big mouth as usual. So before I get into that, I'm also going to do news from the hood, and then we're going to get into this, play some of Dr. King's famous speeches. The longest speech I'm going to play tonight is going to be the I Have a Dream speech. I'm going to play that. And that's about a 17-minute clip, so I'm going to play the entire clip of that because I think that's important. So what I'm going to do, like I always do, I'm going to play our commercial, then come back, and then get on the story because it is an important one that I think. Well, I think all of them are important, but tonight's story is pretty important. So let me play the ad, about a minute. Be right back.
Welcome to the Initiative Radio Network, where you will find programs that will not only pique your interest.
Can't hardly hear that one. Okay, let me go to another one. Hold on 1 second.
In February of 1926, historian Carter G. Woodson launched Negro History Week, which later became Black History Month. On the Ant Canary Experience, we celebrate Black History 12 months a year. Hi, I'm Ant Canary, host of the Ant Canary Experience, the show for all things about our history, not history. On the Experience, we also talk about current events that affect the Black community and the country. So join me every Tuesday night from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. to get your weekly Black History lesson. You can listen live or call me at 563-999-3682. I talk about topics that schools are afraid to tell our children about. That's every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Please check out the Ant Canary Experience.
Okay, let me give out that number again, 563-999-3682, 563-999-3682. This is a special episode of the Ant Canary Experience, because I got a lot to cover, so I'm going to try to get it all in. Before we get into the topic, which is the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, I'm going to play some of his most famous speeches. Let's go to the news. Okay, this segment is called News from the Hood, and I'm going to go over three news stories that I think that are important to talk about for this week. I did have them in order, but now I've got to get them back into order. Okay, here we go. So the first item I want to talk about right now, the Mississippi burning KKK leader dies in prison at 92. Edgar Ray Killen, and it's amazing how these clowns have three names and forever out there killing folk. A former KKK leader who was convicted in the 1964 Mississippi burning slayings of three civil rights workers has died in prison at the age of 92. I'm surprised he made it that long. The one-time Klan leader was serving three consecutive 20-year terms for manslaughter when he died at 9 p.m. Thursday night inside the Mississippi State Penitentiary. An autopsy was pending, but no foul play was suspected, the correctional statement said. His conviction came 41 years to the day after James Chaney, Michael Schwinner, and Andrew Goodman, all in their 20s, were ambushed and killed by Klansmen. Three Freedom Summer workers had been investigating the burning of a black church near Philadelphia, Mississippi. A deputy sheriff in Philadelphia had arrested them on a traffic charge, then released them after alerting a mob. Mississippi's then governor claimed their disappearance was a hoax before their bodies were dug up. The slaying shocked the nation, helped spur passage of the landmark Civil Rights Act of 1964, and were dramatized in the 1988 movie Mississippi Burning. A part-time preacher, that's a stretch, and lumber mill operator was 80 when a Keshoba, I think that's how you say, county jury convicted him of three counts of manslaughter on June 21st, 2005. Despite his assertions that he was innocent, Killen was the only person ever to face state murder charges and the only one to end up in state prison. It wasn't even murder, it was manslaughter, David Goodman, Andrew's younger brother, observed on Friday. Killen wouldn't say much about the killings during the 2014 interview with the Associated Press inside the penitentiary. He said he remained a segregationist who did not believe in racial equality, but contended he harbored no ill will toward blacks. Killen said he never had talked about the events that landed him behind bars and never would. I don't know why this clown even lasted as long as he did in prison, unless he had boys in there that helped protect him. This next story, this is the story about the picture, the little kid that was photographed with the hoodie that had coolest monkey in the jungle, and I'm sure if you've been on social media, you've heard about this story and you've seen it. but I will say this about it, that when I first saw the picture, I was kind of shocked by it because, you know, if you're looking at this picture, and I've got a picture of it right here in my hand, now you got a picture of a little kid, like he's probably maybe 5 or 6. He's got on jeans, got his hands in his pocket. He's standing there chilling, got on a green hoodie, and it says, coolest monkey in the jungle. And when I saw that, I'm like, now, there had to have been an adult to see this, to say, you know, you know, kind of say, you know, this might not be a good idea. And then people kind of went, you know, ballistic over it. And then they had a picture of a little white kid, and he had a different hoodie on, an orange one. I can't remember what it said, but it didn't say anything about a month. So after a couple of days died down, the mother came out, and she wasn't offended by it. And she pretty much told everybody else that they need to chill. She said they were overreacting and making a bigger deal about it than what should have been. And then I started thinking about it, and I was like, well, you know what? Maybe she's right. She may have a point. Because they aren't from America. They're from, I want to say, Britain. So what we are offended by over here may be different over there. And I have called my children, when they were younger, monkeys, and I'm sure a lot of other people have too. And it's not calling them monkeys to be a derogatory term, but, you know, calling them monkeys because it's a nickname. But, you know, people saw that and they kind of went nuts about it. And because, too, you got to remember over here in America, black people have been called monkeys. There were pictures of President Obama and his family, their faces superimposed on monkeys, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, a lot of people may have overreacted. There were stores in, I think, South Africa had been pretty much torn down because of this. But according to the mother, she's, you know, she's cool with it. And then a couple of days after that, Diddy offered him a modeling contract for like $1 million. So he's going to make out like a fat rat. But like I said, some people were offended by the shirt. I kind of was at first until I figured, you know, got a little bit more information and then, you know, kind of chilled out about it. But who makes out in this story? Him and his mom. They can get $1 million contract to be a model. So I think it's pretty cool. And this last story, which ties into what we're talking about tonight, on Friday, your president said something stupid and racial as usual, where he decided to call countries in Africa and Haiti, he decided to call them shitholes. And they talked about this on the news all over the weekend. Come to find out today that you got a bunch of the Republicans in there. You know, now instead of them saying that he said, which they didn't deny, said shitholes, now they think it's shithouse. So now they want to debate which, you know, which is worse, a shithole, calling something a shithole and calling it a shithouse. Well, I mean, hell, shit goes in both of them. So what's the difference? Just took out house for hole. They're still, you know, calling countries that this, you know, that this, a country allegedly has ties with shitholes. But he did say, well, you know, we don't mind taking people in from Norway. So this guy cannot keep his fucking mouth closed. Excuse my French, but I mean, he's a racist. He's a piece of shit. And his followers don't seem to have a problem with it. Every time he opens up his mouth, he says something dumb and ignorant. Somebody needs to remind this clown that he is a president of every United States citizen, not just a few that look like him or a few that's got money in their pocket like him, or allegedly. We don't know how much money he has. He's probably got a lot less than he says he does. But to sit there and call countries shitholes, we need more people coming in, people from Sweden, Norway, I'm sorry. We already know that most of the people from Norway are white. So, you know, I'm not going to get a whole lot into that because I think he's a clown. He's a bigot. He's a dumb bastard. He can't help himself. Which is why today's topic is very important. So, you know, I'm not going to go into that because I'm sure you've heard, you know, you've heard about these, except for the other story you might have heard, but yeah, these other ones I'm sure you've heard, but, you know, it's important to at least bring them up and put them out there so we all know what's going on because, unfortunately, a lot of our people don't follow the news like they should. So that's part of the reason why I do From the Hood. So there we go. That's this week's news from the Hood. Yesterday was Martin Luther King's. We celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday, and I did want to get out and do some things around the city. I was getting over bad cold. My kids were sick last week. It seemed like everybody came out with the flu, and then everybody decided they wanted to give it to me. You know, I didn't ask for it, but I didn't have the flu. I had a bad cold, and I was sick this whole weekend. So I kept trying to keep it with a lot of stuff online. Last night they played the movie Selma, and I went to the movies to see this, and I remember there were parts in that movie that made me cry. I actually sat in the movie and cried because the first scene that stirred me was the scene where the church blew up in Birmingham and killed the four little girls. That scene messed me up, and then the scene where the cops shot the young guy in the restaurant. I cried on that part in the movie theater because it's like that happened over 50 years ago. We still got cops killing innocent people for no reason. We still going through the same mess. So I watched most of it last night. I didn't watch the whole thing again. But there were parts in there that, you know, got me to thinking. And on social media, which is I'm on a whole lot, and I remember probably a couple of months ago, people, I forgot what we were talking about, but there was a discussion about why don't we have any black leaders like Malcolm and Martin. And the reason is pretty simple, because the government don't like it. Martin was assassinated. Malcolm was assassinated. Anybody, you know, people in the movement were killed. Medgar Evers was killed. I mean, I can go on and on and on. The first thing I read, you know, about the KKK, you know, he's found guilty of killing civil rights, workers. And we had, you know, we back then, you know, they were black, white. I mean, there were all kinds of people in the movement. And then, you know, there were parts of the movie, too, where the FBI, because J. Edgar Hoover did not like Martin Luther King and lied on him, tried to make it look like he was having an affair. And he did pretty much everything he could to discredit him. You got the FBI, you know, infiltrating the Black Panthers. We all know what happened to the Panthers, and kind of related, you know, he had the CIA dropping drugs into the black community, crack. So it seems like every time, you know, you get a movement like this started, you get so-called leader, if you want to say that. What happens to that so-called leader? That so-called leader gets murdered. told. Malcolm was murdered. Martin was murdered. We don't have anybody, you know, we don't have that one person that's out there, as people call, you know, call as a leader, and there's a reason for that. Because if there was one, they'd be dead by now. And we have groups, but we don't have that one person taking charge. Because we know how the government works. That's a bad thing to say, but it's the truth. You know, and what's jacked up about it is that, you know, you have the KKK that's been around for over 100 years. You know, their membership went down, went up. You know, they're still around. You could say they're still relevant. But then if you have a group like the Panthers that was out in the community doing good for, you know, for the black community, you know, you have leaders like MLK and Malcolm, you know, what happened to them? They were killed. So there are people in this country that don't like a black man, you know, taking charge and doing what they were put here to do. You know, and you find a lot of this now that you have a bigoted president who has a shitty cabinet, whose actions are emboldening. You know, matter of fact, when he decided he wanted to call these countries where these black and brown people come from shitholes, you had these groups coming out talking about, oh, yeah, we agree what you're saying. We applaud what you're saying. So my thing is, if it looked like a racist, if it sounds like a racist, if it walks like a racist, then that damn thing is a racist. Point blank, that's all there is to it. And he is a racist. Now he'll sit around, now he'll have these photo ops where he'll sit around and try to have four or five black people around him. But that's just take pictures. He don't mean a damn thing by it. And we know it. That's why people, you need to open up your eyes and you need to start paying attention to what's going on around you. Because this shit is not cool. I went off on somebody today. Well, not went off, but, you know, my thing was, you know, they try to keep us quiet for like 400 years. And now we're starting to speak out. Now they can't, now all of a sudden, you know, they can't do nothing with us because people are getting tired of the bullshit. That's just the way it is. Just kind of talk and step out at the same time. But, that's just the way it is. Sorry about that. It is just the heat. It's getting kind of chilly in this piece. But the people in this country, especially minorities, are getting fed up with the bullshit. You know, players exercising their First Amendment right to protest on the field. And I love when people say, do it on their time. Well, you know what? When they go out there to play a game, that is their time. That is their time. It's not your time. It's their time. They're the ones out there working. You know, we can never say anything or protest about anything without somebody saying, you know, pretty much, you know, you Negroes are getting too uppity. You need to learn your place. That kind of stuff used to work back in the day, but it don't work no more. Because we're not going to keep quiet. You know, you have too many people, like the show that I do, like other shows on the network, other shows all over the country, all over the world doing the same thing. We're not going to keep quiet. You know, one thing I noticed, the arguing with racists. You might as well argue at your TV. You get this. It's about the same, because races. I've noticed that races are so stupid. It's kind of funny, and it kind of feels sorry for them in a way, because they don't realize how dumb they are. You know, they want to discriminate against people that don't look like them, and they, and that's the only reason why. The color of their skin is different. That's it. Don't know anything about the person. Don't know the background. Don't know nothing. Just all of a sudden, you just don't like me because I'm black. And that's it. You know. And then the comeback is, well, black people are racist too. No, black people aren't. We don't have the power that white people have. Black people are not the majority yet. But they will be in about 20, 30 years. And then there's a story that I was reading too, and I posted that you may not have known, you may not know this, but there's a thing now where pregnant Russian women are paying big money to come into the country and have their babies in Florida, Miami to be exact. So what happens when a mother from another country comes into this country and has a baby? What happens? The baby is made a citizen. Now, what color are most Russian people? They're white. And I thought about this. I was talking to a friend of mine at work the other day. Let's take this logically. You've got people from Russia, women in particular, from Russia, coming over to have their babies in Miami, Florida, United States. When the baby is born, the baby is automatically a citizen because why? It was born in the United States. What comes with that? Perks come with that because all of a sudden now the mother can go through the process of becoming an American citizen. At the same time, your president wants to put out millions of brown people. And what is his main thing? Wants to make America great again? Or that's just code for wants to make America white again? So he wants to bring, so he's letting people from Russia come in and have their babies, which will make them American citizens. And at the same time, pushing out white, brown people. So the numbers are going to go kind of, you know, and that's exactly what he's doing. Because they're not white people aren't having babies as much as they used to. But the population is dipping. So they know that, you know, being in a majority comes with power, money, the whole nine. And soon they're going to be the minority. Black and brown people are going to be the majority. So what do you think is going to happen? You think we should treat them the same way they treated our people back in the day? Maybe that's why they're so nervous. Could be. Could be. So, thought I'd throw that out there just in case you didn't know. I posted it. I can't remember where I posted it. I posted it Friday. I was reading and I came across it and said, oh, man, now this is pretty messed up. Then I started thinking about it, putting the puzzle pieces together, and then this is what you get. So they want to push out brown people and then, you know, blame it on some BS, you know, once up and say that we got gangs coming over here and all that kind of bullshit. We got to build a wall. Yeah, okay. You can build a wall all you want to. They can still come in through the Gulf of Mexico. They can still come around. They can come through California. They can come through Florida. They can come through the Gulf. They can still come. Wall ain't going to keep nobody out. Spend all that money on a wall. It's not going to keep anybody out. Need to pay attention. I mean, if you're a racist and you have to keep continually trying to convince other people that you're not a racist, then you're probably a racist. I'm not a racist. Yeah, you probably are. And then if you're people that, you know, will defend you no matter what, lie for your ass no matter what, all of a sudden you're sitting there debating whether or not he said shithole or not shithouse. like that's going to make a bit of difference. And the cool thing was yesterday, the vice president got dissed sitting in the front row of a black church, got dissed by a black preacher, and he got spanked. There wasn't a damn thing he could do about it. You know, and these guys, they kill me. All of a sudden, they want to sit there and act so sanctified and so righteous. You know, Dr. King was this, da-da-da-da-da, and then they do the exact opposite of what Dr. King was about. The exact opposite. They don't give a damn if you sick or poor in this country. They don't give a damn about education. They don't give a damn about nothing. But, Dr. King was this, Dr., you know. Either you are a Christian or you're not. There is no in between. So either you're going to do good by the people in this country or you're not. And if you're not, why don't you just come out and say so, instead of hiding behind a Bible and trying to be so fucking sanctimonious when you're not. People can see through that bullshit. You know, phony Christians don't impress me. And your president was accused of trying to get freaky with a couple of porn stars. Had to pay one of them money to keep it hush hush. So if you're innocent and you didn't do anything, why would you give anybody, you know, a couple of $100,000 to not say anything about it? And as usual, the so-called evangelical phony asses don't say a damn thing about it. You have them all over the place, you know, screaming that, well, you know, if we don't bow down to Trump, you know. The wrath of God is going to come. Okay, you know what? The wrath of God could have been here centuries ago. That kind of bullshit don't scare nobody. Don't scare me. You know, all of a sudden you want to scare your dumbass followers into believing that crap. Well, I don't believe it. I don't. It takes a whole lot to scare me. I'll just sit up here and look at you with my I'm scared of your face. Whatever that face is, but, you know, that kind of crap don't scare me. You know, and I did a show last week on, you know, that phony gospel doctrine, whatever you want to call it. You know, some of you so-called preachers can fool your flock, but you don't fool me. Oh, the weather's doing what it's doing because people aren't, look, who gives a damn? I mean, my thing is, God could have did something about this stuff a long time ago instead of letting millions of people from Africa come over here and be slaved, be raped, and murdered, and exploited. Why didn't the world end back then? Still here 400 or 500 years later. You know, you still got people sitting here who wants to do the same thing to minorities in this country. I'm here to tell you, the minorities in this country are not going to put up with that bullshit. That's why I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing to make sure that that doesn't happen. And if I offend you and you're a racist and my actions offend you, I got two words for you. Suck it. I don't give a shit. We are not going to sit here and go through this crap again. You know, back in the day, you get away with calling black people niggas. Well, you do that crap now, and your ass is going to end up in the hospital. And you say, well, what? I didn't. I don't know how I ended up here. Yes, you do. You know exactly why you ended up in the hospital. That victim shit. And I keep telling people all the time, don't let your president be the one to get your ass, be the reason why you get your ass beat. A lot of people think that, you know, Trump can say what he say and do what he do, and oh, that's cute, I can do this. No, you can't. That fat fuck's got bodyguards. You on the street don't. Your boys ain't going to put up, you know, your boys ain't going to take up for you. When you get your ass beat, they're going to run. They're going to run opposite direction. And then come back and then help you up and put you in the car and take you to the hospital. So don't let your president be the reason why you get your ass kicked. Black people and minorities, we're not taking that shit no more. They used to, so you got a choice. I mean, if you want to go home and say nigga, nigga, nigga all you want to in the confines of your house, feel free to do so. If you want to say nigga, nigga, nigga around your friends, feel free to do so. But when you step outside your house, you out there in public, and you start all that nigga, 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 you know, when you get your ass kicked, don't be shocked. You bought that on yourself. I'm just here to tell you. So don't be looking around with your, what did I do? Yeah, you know exactly what you did. My thing is, if you want to be a racist ass and you know, you don't like the idea of black people and minorities, you know, that's fine too. But just stay out of our way. You know. You don't have to like it. That's on you. You get out here in the street and you start spewing all that garbage and then you get your ass kicked. Don't sit up there and act like you're surprised because, you know, you're on the ground looking up. Somebody done knocked your ass out. And there are videos, you know, people out there spouting all that garbage and they get the shit knocked out of them. And all of a sudden they want to play the victim. Maybe you should keep your damn mouth closed. You wouldn't have got your ass beat. How's that? I mean, it's really simple. This is America. You can do what you want to do, be what you, to a certain extent, be who you want to be to a certain extent. But now, you know, you think, you know, your president think, you know, he can say what he want to say. It's cute. He wants to call neo-Nazis very fine people. David Duke and all them clowns. Oh, I agree. Now, you think it's cute because, you know, you can say it. Well, you can say it if you want. But there are consequences and repercussions. My thing, if you want to impress me, go to a nightclub and say that out in the middle of the dance floor and there's a bunch of niggas around and see what happened to you. Feel free to do so. See what happened. Don't forget to take pictures. We can see. So it's jacked up that we're still talking about this stuff 50 years later. You know, still talking about it. I've got kids. I've got to sit and try to explain to them what the deal is. Because there's still people out there like this. And we're not going to roll over and take it. Not like we used to. So, like I said, if you don't want to get your ass kicked, don't try to be like your big mouth president. Because if this guy was some regular Joe Schmo in the street saying what he said, he would have had his ass kicked by now. And it would have been, you know, and complain whether or not it's justified or not. But yeah. I mean, we don't play that. But what you need to do is know how to keep your thoughts to yourself and let us, you know, there's a saying, and I don't know if it's true or not, that all men are created equal. Certain people, we're not. Just because of the way we look. If we are created equal, then we all, then, you know, let us do our thing. As long as it's not affecting you, I mean, we pretty much, you know, want to just work, provide for our family, take care of ourselves, live in a nice neighborhood, have nice things. So what's so hard about that? People, well, black people, it is black, yeah, white people are the same way. You're no special. Then, you know, you're not special just because you were painted a different color. You're not special. You still bleed the same color blood that everybody else does. You're not special. Yeah, I thought you were back in the day, but now you're not special. You can be special to you or to your mama, but you're not special to nobody else. You're just a person like everybody else. Let me get to these clips. This first clip is a clip on income inequality. Play it and I'll be back. Play it and I'll be right back.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists.
Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor.
The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counters.
Well,
it didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes, yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages. America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us.
If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
What is the relationship between this and the reality of the Negro masses?
Well, to leave Martin out of it for a moment. Martin's very rare, very great man. Martin's rare for two reasons. Partly because, just because he is. And because he's a real Christian, and he really believes in nonviolence. He's right at something in himself, which permits him, allows him to do it. And he still has great moral authority in the South. He has none whatever in the North. Poor Martin has gone through God knows what kind of hell to awaken the American conscience. But Martin has reached the end of his rope. There's some things Martin can't do. Martin's only one man. Martin can't solve the nation's central problem by himself. There are lots of people, lots of black people, I mean now, who don't go to church no more and don't listen to Martin, you know, and who anyway are themselves produced by civilization, which is always glorified violence, unless the Negro had the gun. So that Martin is undercut by the performance of the country. The country is only concerned about nonviolence if it seems that I'm going to get violent. But I'm worried about nonviolence if it's some Alabama sheriff.
Jim, what do you see deep in the recesses of your own mind as the future of our nation? And I ask that question in that way because I think that the future of the Negro and the future of the nation are linked.
They're indissoluble.
Yeah. Now, what do you see? Are you essentially optimistic or pessimistic? And I really don't want to put words in your mouth, because what I really want to find out is what you really believe.
Well, I'm both glad and sorry you asked me that question. I'll do my best to answer it. I can't be a pessimist because I'm alive. To be a pessimist means that you have agreed that human life is an academic matter. So I'm forced to be an optimist. I'm forced to believe that we can survive whatever we must survive. But the Negro in this country, the future of the Negro in this country is precisely as bright or as dark as the future of the country. It is entirely up to the American people and our representatives. It is entirely up to the American people whether or not they're going to face and deal with and embrace this stranger whom they maligned so long. What white people have to do is try to find out in their own hearts why it was necessary to have a nigger in the first place. Because I'm not a nigger. I'm a man. But if you think I'm a nigger, it means you need it. The question you've got to ask yourself, the white population of this country has got to ask itself, North and South, because it's one country, And for a Negro, there's no difference in the North and the South. There's just a difference in the way they, in a way, they castrate you. But the fact of the castration is the American fact. If I'm not a Negro here, and you invented him, you, the white people, invented him, then you got to find out why.
Well,
and the future of the country depends on that, whether or not it's able to ask that question.
As a Negro and as an American, I can only hope that America has the strength and the capacity,
the moral strength,
to ask and answer that question in affirmative and constructive way.
To face that question.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Captain.
Okay, this clip is on violence and civil disobedience.
We must continue to delve deeper into the philosophy of nonviolent resistance. That is something about this method that has power. And I know that there are those who will ridicule it occasionally, but it has worked miracles in the South. It has morality with it because it gives us the opportunity to work to secure moral ends through moral means. This is the morality of it, but it has certain practical consequences. It exposes the moral defenses of the opponent, somehow weakens his morale, and all at the same time it is working on his conscience. It disarms him, and he just doesn't know what to do with it. If he puts you in jail, that's all right. If he doesn't put you in jail, fine. If he beats you up, that's all right. If he doesn't beat you up, that's all right. If he tries to kill you, all right, you develop the quiet courage of dying if necessary without killing. If he tries to threaten you, all right, if he doesn't. And that is something about it which causes the opponent not to know what to do. Now, he would know what to do with violence. He could call out the state militia. He could call out the National Guard and kill hundreds and hundreds of innocent people and argue that they are inciting a riot. They know how to handle violence, but they proved over and over again that they don't know how to handle nonviolence because they throw people... They try to handle it by throwing us in jail. But what happens? We go into the jails of Jackson, Mississippi, and transform these jails from dungeons of shame to havens of freedom and human dignity. Can't stop it. I believe firmly that this is the way. Now, that is another aspect of it, about this method, and people ask me about it all the time. So, what do you mean when you tell us to love these people who are beating on us and bombing our houses and kicking our children around? What in the world do you mean when you say love such people? And I always have to stop and try to define the meaning of love in this area. And interestingly enough, Greek philosophy comes to our aid at this point. There are three words in the Greek language for love. One of them is the word eros. Now, eros is a sort of aesthetic love. The philosopher Plato talks about it a great deal in his dialogues, the yearning of the soul for the realm of the divine. It has come to us to mean a sort of romantic love, and so we all know about eros. We've experienced it. We read about it in the beauties of literature. In a sense, Edgar Allan Poe was talking about eros when he talked about his beautiful Annabel Lee with a love surrounded by the halo of eternity. In a sense, Shakespeare was talking about eros when he said, love is not love, which alters whence alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove. It is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempest and is never shaken. It is a star to every wandering bark. You know, I can remember that because I used to quote it to my wife when we were courting. That's eros. That's eros. Then the Greek language talks about phileo, which is another level of love. It is an intimate affection between personal friends. On this level, we love because we are love. We love people that we like. This is friendship. Then the Greek language has another word called agape. Agape is more than romantic love. Agape is more than friendship. Agape is not something affectionate. Agape is understanding, creative, redemptive goodwill for all men.
It is an overflowing love which seeks nothing in return. Theologians would say that it is the love of God operating in the human heart. And when one rises to love on this level, he loves men not because he likes them, but he loves every man because God loves him. He goes on with that. And so he rises to the level of hating the system rather than the individual who is caught up in that system. He loves the person and hates the evil deed. And I think this is what Jesus meant when he said, love your enemies. And I'm happy that he didn't say like your enemies, because it's pretty difficult to like some people. It's difficult to like people bombing your home and threatening your children and kicking you about. But Jesus says, love them, and love is greater than like. Love is understanding, creative, redemptive goodwill for all men. And somehow, more and more, I've come to believe this.
Yes.
This is the way that we will get out of this dark night of oppression and make of this nation a better nation. It means that we can stand up and allow the opposition to know that we will not accept injustice.
Yes.
We will stand up against it with our lives,
yes,
but we will never stoop down to the level of violence and hatred. And we will come to that point when we will be able to convince him that a new world is emerging. And I tell you this evening that it will give us the right attitude.
Yes.
I know sometimes how discontent we get, and we have a right to get discontent, and how frustrated we get in the process sometimes. But I submit to you this evening that this way of nonviolence will help us not to seek to rise from a position of disadvantage to one of advantage, thus subverting justice. We will not substitute one tyranny for another. For black supremacy is as dangerous as white supremacy. I am convinced this afternoon that God is not interested merely in the freedom of black men and brown men and yellow men. God is interested in the freedom of the whole human race and the creation of a society. I believe with this method and this approach, we will be able to win. And finally, as we struggle, we do not struggle alone. It's dark sometimes. It's difficult. And particularly for those who are struggling in the Deep South, facing all of the violence and all of the suffering. That is something that consoles us along the way. We are convinced that our cause is right. I return to Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia, not in despair, not in bitterness. I return knowing that we are moving into a bright day of freedom.
Yes.
We, through our struggles, through our suffering, through our sacrifice, will be able to achieve the American dream. This will be the day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last, thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Okay, so this is going to be the long one. This is going to be the speech that he did, I Have a Dream speech that he did in D.C. This one's the long one. I'm going to play the entire thing in its entirety. So if you hadn't heard it in a while or first time you're hearing it, this is the entire speech.
Thank you.
At this time, I have the honor to present to you the moral leader of our nation. I have the pleasure to present to you Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr.
I am happy to join with you today in what will go down in history as the greatest demonstration for freedom in the history of our nation. Five score years ago, a great American in whose symbolic shadow we stand today signed the Emancipation Proclamation. This momentous decree came as a great beacon light of hope to millions of Negro slaves who had been seared in the flames of withering injustice. It came as a joyous daybreak to end the long night of their captivity. But 100 years later, the Negro still is not free. 100 years later, the life of the Negro is still sadly crippled by the manacles of segregation and the chains of discrimination. 100 years later, the Negro lives on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. 100 years later, the Negro is still languished in the corners of American society and finds himself in exile in his own land. And so we've come here today dramatize a shameful condition. In a sense, we've come to our nation's capital to cash a check. When the architects of our republic wrote the magnificent words of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, they were signing a promissory note to which every American was to fall heir. This note was a promise that all men, yes, black men as well as white men, would be guaranteed the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It is obvious today that America has defaulted on this promissory note insofar as her citizens of color are concerned. Instead of honoring this sacred obligation, America has given the Negro people a bad check, a check which has come back marked insufficient funds. But we refuse to believe that the Bank of Justice is bankrupt. We refuse to believe that there are insufficient funds in the great vaults of opportunity of this nation. So we've come to cash this check, a check that will give us upon demand the riches of freedom and the security of justice. We have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage in the luxury of cooling off or to take the tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real the promises of democracy. Now is the time to rise from the dark and desolate valley of segregation to the sunlit path of racial justice. Now is the time to lift our nation from the quicksands of racial injustice to the solid rock of brotherhood. Now is the time to make justice a reality for all of God's children. It would be fatal for the nation to overlook the urgency of the moment. This sweltering summit of the Negro's legitimate discontent will not pass until that is an invigorating autumn of freedom and equality. 1963 is not an end, but a beginning. Those who hope that the Negro needed to blow off steam and will now be content will have a rude awakening if the nation returns to business as usual. There will be neither rest nor tranquility in America until the Negro is granted his citizenship rights. The whirlwinds of revolt will continue to shake the foundations of our nation until the bright day of justice emerges. But that is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protests to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. And the marvelous new militancy which has engulfed the Negro community must not lead us to a distrust of all white people. For many of our white brothers, as evidenced by their presence here today, have come to realize that their destiny is tied up with our destiny. And they have come to realize that their freedom is inextricably bound to our freedom. We cannot walk alone. And as we walk, we must make the pledge that we shall always march ahead. We cannot turn back. There are those who are asking the devotees of civil rights, when will you be satisfied? We can never be satisfied as long as the Negro is the victim of the unspeakable horrors of police brutality. We can never be satisfied. As long as our bodies, heavy with the fatigue of travel, cannot gain lodging in the motels of the highways and the hotels of the cities. We cannot be satisfied as long as the Negro's basic mobility is from a smaller ghetto to a larger one. We can never be satisfied as long as our children are stripped of their selfhood and robbed of their dignity by signs stating for whites only. We cannot be satisfied as long as a Negro in Mississippi cannot vote and a Negro in New York believes he has nothing for which to vote. No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream. I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. Some of you have come fresh from narrow jail cells. Some of you have come from areas where your quest for freedom left you battered by the storms of persecution and staggered by the winds of police brutality. You have been the veterans of creative suffering. Continue to work with the faith that unearned suffering is redemptive. Go back to Mississippi. Go back to Alabama. Go back to South Carolina. Go back to Georgia. Go back to Louisiana. Go back to the slums and ghettos of our northern cities. Knowing that somehow this situation can and will be changed. Let us not wallow in the valley of despair. I say to you today, my friend, so even though we face the difficulties of today and tomorrow, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will they be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. I have a dream that one day every valley shall be exalted, and every hill and mountain shall be made low, the rough places will be made plain, and the crooked places will be made straight, and the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together. This is our hope. This is the faith that I go back to the South with. With this faith, we will be able to hew out of the mountain of despair a stone of hope. With this faith, we will be able to transform the jangling discords of our nation into a beautiful symphony of brotherhood. With this faith, we will be able to work together, to pray together, to struggle together, to go to jail together, to stand up for freedom together, knowing that we will be free one day. This will be the day. This will be the day when all of God's children will be able to sing with new meaning, "My country, 'tis of thee." Sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrims' pride. From every mountainside, Let freedom ring, and if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. And so let freedom ring from the prodigious hilltops of New Hampshire. Let freedom ring from the mighty mountains of New York. Let freedom ring from the heightening Alleghenies of Pennsylvania. Let freedom ring from the snow-capped Rockies of Colorado. Let freedom ring from the curvaceous slopes of California. But not only that, let freedom ring from Stone Mountain of Georgia. Let freedom ring from Lookout Mountain of Tennessee. Let freedom ring from every hill and molehill of Mississippi, from every mountainside. Let freedom ring, and when this happens, and when we allow freedom ring, when we let it ring from every village and every hamlet, from every state and every city, we will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, "Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last."
Okay, now this is a clip from his very last speech before he was assassinated.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over that. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. And so just as I say we aren't going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around, we aren't going to let any injunction turn us around. What will happen now? We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And He's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
And this last clip I want to play, this is a speech by Robert Kennedy. He announced the assassination of Martin Luther King.
They know about Martin Luther King.
We have left it up to you to let the handle.
Could you lower those signs, please? I have some very sad news for all of you. and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country in greater polarization. Black people amongst blacks and white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand compassion and love. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times. My favorite poem, my favorite poet was Aeschylus. He once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God." What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another, feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black. We can do well in this country. We will have difficult times. We've had difficult times in the past, but we will have difficult times in the future. It is not the end of violence. It is not the end of lawlessness, and it's not the end of disorder. But the vast majority of white people and the vast majority of black people in this country want to live together, want to improve the quality of our life, and want justice for all human beings that abide in our land. Dedicate ourselves to what the Greeks wrote so many years ago, to tame the savageness of man and make gentle the life of this world. Let us dedicate ourselves to that and say a prayer for our country and for our people. Thank you very much.
And on that note, I'm going to bring it into tonight's show. I think I'm going to end up saying, They may have all come over here on different boats, but right now we are in the same boat. So we can either learn to live with each other and tolerate each other's differences, or we can just beat the hell out of each other and kill each other, and that'll be the end of it. It's our choice. So I'll be back next week. Hopefully the weather will be a whole lot better. I'll be back next week at regular time, 8 o'clock, from 8 to 10 next week. Until then, I will see you next week. Peace out.